All right, it is time to resume our session for the soil biology and biochemistry general session one. Next, we're going to have Jared Wilmoth, who will be talking to us about the effects of spatial confinement on soil microbial interactions. Thank you, Jared.
So, good morning, everyone. Thank you for attending my talk. Currently, I'm a postdoc at Oak Ridge National Lab, and I work in the Biological and Nanoscale Systems Group. So my group actually uses microfluidics and microfabrication techniques to develop these microsite platforms, or these synthetic platforms, that basically allow us to model how microsites might operate on microbial interactions and behavior in natural systems like soils and sediments. So the platform that I'm going to talk about today is actually the one that's shown here in the image. It's a yellowish-colored chip on top of a microscope stage, and it's a little bit hard to see, but in the center of that chip is an array of little synthetic microsites or microwells, and coming into the image from the top is a microneedle, and so essentially we can grow microbes in these little microsites. We can watch them grow and interact. We can sample the wells during growth. We can take various chemical measurements and do modeling of the system, and so I'll talk about these things today. So I think all of us fully understand and appreciate that microsites are fundamental to understanding biogeochemistry. And, you know, a very simple way to think about microsites in the real world is just a three-dimensional network of these little spheres or micro-niches where organisms grow and interact, and there's a lot of physical and chemical and biological mechanisms at play. But I think a nice way to cut out that complexity just conceptually is to take a slice of that, or like a two-dimensional representation of it, so that we can see what's going on in the microsites and so that we can actually sample what's going on in the microsites. So just to talk a little bit about how we actually make these platforms. So on the right here side of the screen, you can see the different stages of how we develop, but very, very briefly, we just start with a microscope cover slip, okay, a number one glass cover slip, and then we spin a 5-micron thick layer of this transparent epoxy on top. And using photolithography, we can create a lot of little microwells with different sizes, different spatial orientations on the device. And then in order to seed the cells into the wells, you just take some overnight culture and pipette it on top. It can be a single species mixture, it can be a multi-species mixture. And then once the cells are seeded into the wells, we can peel away a layer that's almost like a little piece of saran wrap, and I'll show that in the next slide, that removes cells that are just sort of floating about on top and leaves a few cells isolated in these wells. And then this is a bright field image of one of these arrays on a microscope cover slip. The other thing I should mention is that we cover the wells with a nutrient auger layer. And we can control the chemistry of that nutrient auger layer to mimic the chemistry of soil or the rhizosphere, whatever we're interested in. So this is just an image showing the peeling of this layer away from the glass chip. And so that removes a lot of the extraneous cells that are floating about and just leaves cells isolated in the little microwells. And so the question really is, what is the growth behavior and activity of microbes in confined microscale environments, which again has a lot of implications for understanding how microbial activity exists in natural systems. And so the first experiment that I want to talk about uses confocal imaging of two strains that have fluorescence, and I'll talk about modeling of that system. So this experiment used Pseudomonas aeruginosa, which is really important for biomedical studies because it's a pathogen, but also it's important for understanding environmental systems because it produces really hardy biofilms. And so understanding biofilm structure is using Pseudomonas aeruginosa is a really important model system for that. But we were looking at type 6 secretion interactions, which is a really cool mechanism whereby Pseudomonas aeruginosa can develop these little pili that inject toxins into neighboring organisms. And so what we have here is a system where one mutant of Pseudomonas is actually able to use type 6 secretion killing, and the other mutant of Pseudomonas aeruginosa is susceptible to that attack. Okay, so the green cells are the killers, and the red cells in the images are the susceptible strain. And so one of the things that we found is that even after the cells grow up in the little wells and they're confined to interact with each other, type 6 killing doesn't wipe out all of the red cells, which we would expect. So this is after 24 hours, and it only takes like 8 to 12 hours for the wells to fill up. So these patches of individual cell types are actually persisting right next to each other. And so in order to figure out how that was happening, we used individual based simulations to try to figure out what the mechanism was. And just really briefly, an individual based simulation is actually simulating the interaction and the dynamics of each individual cell in the microwell. Okay, and so you can see as the simulation proceeds, there you start to develop these zones of clearing between the neighboring cells. Okay, and here the simulation carries it out until the nutrients are depleted locally, and so the cells die. But those boundary zones that we saw between the two different cell types is actually, I think, the mechanism that allows them to persist together under like when they're growing right next to each other. So the type 6 killing actually creates these sort of dead zones that separate the cells, and I think that's something really important to think about for environmental systems, that, you know, biofilms aren't, you know, symbiotic all the time. Like, you might have two cell types right next to each other that aren't happy next to each other, but they still persist. So a few steps that we want to take with our model is to optimize it with machine learning and then try to scale it up to environmentally relevant systems like soil aggregates. So instead of just using these individual wells, we can actually start to think about how these things might be interconnected and use different platforms that are more like soil aggregates, for example. So another thing that we can do with these arrays, you can imagine you've got all these little microsites with microbes growing. So, you know, this, one of the ways that we can make chemical measurements is using MALDI-TOF mass spec. So MALDI-TOF stands for matrix-assisted laser desorption ionization time of flight. So essentially, how the MALDI works is you have a laser that can scan across the sample, and it ablates the sample into a mass spectrometer, and you can get sort of like a chemical image map, all right? And so what we were interested in this particular experiment was using Geobacter and Dehalococcoides mccardii. So typically, Geobacter is used for iron reduction experiments and that type of thing, but it's also a carotenoid producer or a vitamin B12 producer. So vitamin B12 is a very important metabolite that not many microbes can make. And Dehalococcoides needs that to break down organic halogens in the environment. So what we have here in the center of the scanning electron micrograph is a Geobacter cell, the football-shaped cell in the center, and then we have a bunch of little Dehalococcoides mccardii cells, which are very small, sort of growing all around. And then on the right, we have an image where we've actually hit that spot with the MALDI laser, and we're able to detect the levels of carotenoid being produced. So you can imagine if you have a large array, you could scan that for important metabolites and get a chemical image map. And so that's one application. So another thing that we can do, because for example, you might not always be able to have fluorescent cells or fluorescent strains, especially if you're working with like freshly isolated microbes from the rhizosphere, which in this case, that's what it was. And so this particular organism is important for nitrogen and carbon cycling in the rhizosphere of poplar. It's a Rhinella strain. But anyways, like, you can see the cells grow under high resolution just using bright field microscopy because the entire platform is transparent. And so one of the things that we can do is go in with a microneedle and sample individual wells for the cells. And so you can do this with various techniques. You can scrape at the cells to loosen them up or use like a water flush technique, which is what I've been doing recently. And ultimately, you can use, if you can at least get like 100 cells from each well, then you can do like whole genome amplification. You know, you can, so if you have two different cell types, you can use that, you can use qPCR to figure out what the relative proportions of those organisms are. But then, of course, you can also isolate messenger RNA, for example, and do transcriptomics or metatranscriptomics. And so there's a lot of application there. And so that really concludes my talk, And there's some references that we have from our group, and this research has been funded by the Department of Energy. And I'll ask if there are any questions.
Thank you, Jared. We have about 5 minutes for questions.
So are you able to, you talked about the risk here, microbes, so are you actually able to isolate from a specific soil that you're interested in to see what kind of interactions are happening there, or?
Yeah, so these particular bacteria came from the rhizosphere of poplar. And poplar is like a really unique model system because we have the genome's been sequenced and all that kind of thing. So there's a lot of interest in poplar. The other thing, though, is that we can make these platforms such that they, instead of the microwells, we actually have platforms that form like these sort of microfluidic channels that represent more of what you might expect on like a plant root surface or something like that. And so, but then we can also make these platforms that actually allow little roots to like grow in to these microfluidic devices. And so there's like all these different levels that we're actually working on right now to look at that. Yeah.
And can you use this technology without isolating the microbes, directly the environment sample, you just take the soil solution and put there and try to see what interactions among all the proteins and bacteria.
Yeah, that's actually something that I'm really interested in. We haven't looked at that yet. But, you know, one thing that we might be able to do, which is something which would be really cool actually, and I think it's kind of like what you're getting at, is we could potentially like lay this chip on top of a soil sample or something and just allow things to grow into those microwells. And I think that's really important because a lot of times when we try to isolate things from the environment, we always think, okay, we can grab one type of cell or one type of species and it'll grow, or sometimes it doesn't. But I think a lot of cases the reason why single species don't grow in isolation is because they need their companion species. And so I think these chips would be a great way to isolate those companion species like in the microsites. So.
So have you started looking at how well that scales up to the different, like something bigger than your microarray? So say take it from your microarray size to an additional culture plate size, and whether or not those dynamics between even just two organisms change at different scales?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So I mean, we actually haven't done that. I think the closest we've come really is with the modeling and sort of scaling that in different ways. But in terms of just verifying it with like a culture plate or in a tube, you know, there's sort of differences, like physical differences in those systems that kind of change things a little bit.
But and you look at how, like, when you slowly start adding species,
how that changes. Yeah.
Anyone else?
So once you put the bacteria, the microbes under the sheet.
Mm-hmm. Could you repeat the question? Oh, yeah. So it depends on the growth conditions of the organisms we're looking at. I mean, so far we've only tested very simple systems where at most we only have two organisms interacting. And so typically, you know, it can either be at room temperature or like 37 degrees Celsius. But we actually have sort of like it's called a live cell chamber that fits on the stage of a microscope. And it's just a closed container that you can control the temperature or, you know, the amount of oxygen that's there. So
in your experiment with Pseudomonas, you said the reason that they end up coexisting is because you get that cone theory?
Yes.
Contact mediated?
That's what we think. It's a candidate mechanism.
Yeah. So I'm curious then if the results would be different if you used a bacteria synthase or something that could be
Yeah. That may have been different because in this case, right, the contact mediation would have facilitated those boundary lines, but if it was just a soluble toxic effector protein, it may have just wiped all of those susceptible cells out. That's a really good point. That could be.
Yeah.